Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
So, like we told you last episode, it's been about a month.
How about that?
But things didn't quite go as I'd planned.
Do they ever?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. So, the original plan, of course, as you knew from last episode, I was to travel to a distant land.
A faraway land. A magical place that is not Tahiti.
And yeah, and that plan got scrapped at literally, 2 days before I was supposed to leave.
Yep.
For various, not dire, but work-related reasons, they decided for me not to go. So, but Daniel had already made plans.
Yep.
And I just decided, you know what, we're going to take a month off anyway.
So we love you, and we're back.
We are back, and this is our post-Halloween episode.
Yes. Happy Halloween.
Yep.
Happy Halloween, ladies.
Very, very well done.
Thank you.
He's going to be in Thor. We'll talk about it in a minute. He's going to be in Thor Ragnarok.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, in the meantime, I did record an episode of Don't Read the Latin that just went up. So, it is episode 65, by the way, of that podcast.
Oh.
A little ahead of us.
Didn't they start after us?
They did, but we've had more hiatus than they have.
True. Would that be high, possibly. Okay.
So, anyway, yeah, we discussed horror tropes.
Go figure. It's a horror film.
It was an interesting podcast. And as the habit I've kind of picked up from them, you seen anything interesting lately?
Seen anything?
Like movies, TV?
I don't get out much. I'm not usually on the cutting edge of consumer media. The newest thing I've seen recently is my wife and I went to see Despicable 3, which was lovely and exactly the sort of brainless comedy that I needed.
Okay.
Because otherwise we're still watching what we affectionately call Fantasies of a Competent President.
Which we'll get into in TV, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have not seen anything in the theaters since Kingsman. I had intentions to go see Blade Runner, the new one, but events just made that impractical.
Can we just pause for a brief moment, though? Mm-hmm. I still am amazed. Blade Runner made $30 million.
And was the number one movie.
And was the number one movie of its week, and it is considered a flop.
This is where you get into the expectation game.
Yes.
And I think that's worth talking about because somebody had also pointed out that when you look at things objectively, Batman v Superman made in the same ballpark money as a lot of the Marvel films that are considered great successes and yet is considered a failure. It wasn't a financial failure, it was a critical failure, so it's still looked down upon. But the thing is, that means a lot of people treat it like a financial failure because of the expectation game.
Yep.
Same with, essentially that is the nature of the stock market.
It's the nature of the stock market. It's, in some senses, it's the nature of the fandom as well. I mean, one of the last penny arcades that I remember reading and enjoying was right before Deathly Hallows came out. Mm-hmm. And they're standing in line to purchase the book. And they strike up a conversation with the person in front. They said, "So do you love it or do you hate it?" And they're like, "It hasn't come out yet. We haven't read it. We haven't..." He's like, no. Either you will take whatever it is she hands you and love it dearly, or nothing that she can do will match the expectations that you have in your head, in which case you already hate it. You know, people, expectations can make or break something, no matter what.
And, the new Blade Runner had, when you're doing a sequel, so many years after the original.
Yep.
Of a cult classic. Although interesting, it is one of those movies. When Blade Runner came out, it was a flop.
Oh, yeah.
It is one of the most beloved science fiction films, period.
Oh, yes.
But it was a failure.
Well, of course, that begs the question, which version? Because there's been, what, six?
At least seven? Three solid ones.
Yeah.
I was at my friend Nick Charles' house this Halloween for a party, and he has a special edition version of Blade Runner that I believe is what they're considering the third version, which is no narration and with whatever the proper amount of scenes are. So, yeah, people look back at Blade Runner fondly, and it's like it wasn't success initially either. It is when it found its audience after the fact that it's considered a classic. So who knows what, because everything I've heard, and this is why I still want to go see it, every person I know that has seen it has thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a suspicion it's going to be history repeating itself. Yeah. I mean, this is sort of what Star Wars is dealing with right now.
When you make a sequel so many years after the original?
Yeah. It's just in this case, the new vision managed to meet expectations. I think that maybe the better way to put it is Lucasfilm did a really good job on properly setting expectations for this film. And it also had the advantage of the fan ire at the prequels.
Oh my, yes.
So in a lot of ways, the fans were like, yeah, as long as it's better than the prequels, we'll be perfectly happy.
Well, did I share with you my little pet theory? Because originally there were going to be 9 movies, right?
Right.
So we have what those of us of a certain age refer to as the original trilogy.
Right.
And now you have these 3 that are coming with The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi from his nap.
Right.
And now you have these extra 3 of Rogue One and the standalone Han Solo movie and the standalone
Boba Fett
movie. And it's like, that's 9 movies. Shazam! We don't need any more. Prequels? What prequels? We don't need no stinking prequels.
Right. So, yeah, I guess a lot of it is where the expectations... I mean, this weekend, Thor Ragnarok opens. And again, you have a lot of expectation, but... it does feel like Marvel has done a good job on properly setting people's... Now, we'll see where it goes, although the fan reaction so far has been positive. But yeah, it's always that game of where the expectations are going
to
go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have to say, once I realized that the guy who was doing this, that first trailer looked something straight out of the 70s to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
But then when I realized that the guy who's directing it is the guy who gave us What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yeah.
And Flight of the Conchords. And it's just like, oh, this is going to be fun.
If there's any justice, then Taika Waititi will have just a stellar career coming from this. I hear he made the set a joy.
I have no doubt in my mind.
And so, they're working on a sequel.
Yeah.
But there's also, they're trying to float a American set TV series in the same universe.
As?
That they are trying to float a What We Do in the Shadows TV series.
Oh!
Not with the same characters, but set in the same universe.
Okay.
But set in America.
Okay, well.
So, we will see where that goes, but it's... you know, you have highly creative people doing highly creative things.
Yes.
Anyway, for movies I actually did see, this Halloween has been a... So, as we talked earlier with my association with Don't Read the Latin, I watch a lot of horror.
Yes.
A lot of horror.
Yes, you do.
And what we did this last week, so for me, it was kind of a trip down memory lane. For the Halloween season, we went back to the archives of the auteur, Mr. John Carpenter.
Oh my.
We've done on movie nights other Carpenters in the past, but we went back and actually watched Halloween.
Oh, the original.
The original. And it was fascinating revisiting it all these years later Because I realize I haven't watched it in at least a decade, if not more.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. That came out in 19 what?
It was in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's late 70s. Yes, it's the codifier of the slasher genre.
Yeah.
What's interesting is, even though it codified a genre, it's not really in it. So, Carpenter was riffing Psycho.
Well, yeah. I mean, he had a huge thing for Hitchcock.
Yeah. And, in fact, one of the things that sold him on casting Jamie Lee Curtis was the fact that she's Janet Leigh's daughter.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out to me. I'd never put those two together before. Yeah.
And he figured, if nothing else, it'd get him some press.
Yeah.
Little did we know he was going to be introducing us to one of our finest screen actresses at the time.
Indeed. 1978, by the way.
Yeah. So, but watching it, the things I was realizing, rewatching it, one, very little actual blood. Again, hearkening back to Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
And also, a great use of so many of the scenes actually take place in daylight. You know, a lot of the establishing and setting up the tone and the tension is seeing Michael in weird, in odd places during the day.
Oh.
But he doesn't really become a threat until after dark.
How about that?
So, yeah, it was just watching that. And I know that I did some post-reading after it. And Carpenter hates that he codified the sex equals death trope. Because what he was trying to convey was these characters were so caught up in other things and distracted, they weren't noticing the threat.
Well, and especially teenagers are so caught up in.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he didn't want it. That, to him, it was they focus on the wrong aspect of what was going on.
Yeah.
Then we also watched Prince of Darkness.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this one?
Tell me more. I may have.
So this is another one that was a commercial flop, but is well-respected years later. There's an unofficial trilogy in Carpenter's work that are The Thing, Prince of Darkness, and In the Mouth of Madness.
Okay.
In how Lovecraftian they are. And Prince of Darkness is a horror movie dealing with the Antichrist and quantum physics.
Well, having stuck my big toe into the concept of quantum physics, that's not a far step.
No, and apparently, you know, I remember seeing it in the theaters when it first came out,
mm-hmm.
and it was my first introduction to the concept of quantum physics. And the fact that years later people are saying, yeah, what it discussed of quantum physics isn't that far off.
Yeah. 1987. But, yeah, I mean, yeah. That's pretty much when they were, when it was coming up.
Yeah. So, but an effective horror film, and Alice Cooper appears in it.
What we're talking about from central casting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Playing a homeless person under an influence of an evil force.
So, again, not a stretch.
Yeah.
Donald Pleasance.
Yeah.
Victor Wong. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, it has a great cast.
Yeah.
It really does. It also inspired a meme. I don't know if you've ever seen it. There's a meme of a guy with a porn stash suddenly waking up, rolling over, and there's something scary in bed next to him.
And it's not The Godfather?
It's not The Godfather.
Okay.
This is, and people Photoshop different things, like the Burger King, the creepy version of the Burger King and whatnot. It's from this. It's from Prince of Darkness.
Okay.
Very effective horror film. Very much in the an 80s film.
Who could ask for more?
So, yeah. So those are what I watched film-wise. So we were talking earlier, Thor Ragnarok comes out this weekend.
Yep.
I think we're ready.
You know, I can't make it opening weekend for various and sundry reasons, but we will likely go probably Veterans Weekend.
I am ready.
Yep.
I'm there.
Yep.
We've been making plans for a couple of weeks now. Me and my movie going group mm-hmm. of malcontents.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, no, it's so we will see where that goes. Other thing, what we assume is going to be the last trailer for The Last Jedi dropped this week.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. It's not going to end the way you think. I'm like, really? It's not going to involve a giant planet-sized star destroyer or star base?
Yeah.
like all the other ones have.
Well, here's the thing I was taking. It's like, so they're I already see where their Chewie, we're home moment is going to be.
Oh, yes.
In this latest trailer.
Oh, when Luke walks into...
When Luke walks into the Falcon. I think, if nothing else, it shows how important the Falcon is.
Oh, my, yes.
In the mythos, and how much weight that ship has.
Well, you think about it. I mean, it, while he has kind of fallen out of favor of late, I remember Joss Whedon talking about Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he talked about is that the extra member of the crew is the ship.
Yeah.
And in a similar sense, it is that sort of a, I mean, yeah, Chewie were home. I swear to God, if you are over the age of 40 and did not get misty at that, you have no soul, man. Yeah.
So we'll see. We're less than 2 months. I mean, it's November. It's coming out in December.
Yep.
It is coming quick, and I'm also ready.
I have to say, speaking of heartless people, mm-hmm. if you plan on going to see the next Star Wars movie and you don't have a hanky in your pocket for when Carrie Fisher shows up on screen, rethink your priorities.
Oh, I know people that it's just, they have trouble watching the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the emotion, I mean, that's the emotional weight right there.
You know, I have to say, whoever is running Star Wars social media these days is spot on their game. Because there was one of the trailers that came out. It wasn't even her face. It was just her torso. And, you know, you see her costume, you see her hand, and it says the general. And someone said, I'm not okay. And the immediate response was, she'd want you to be.
Yeah. Yeah, oh God, the Hamill's tributes to her.
Oh.
Oh, speaking of Hamill.
Yes.
Quick digression.
Hmm.
So, we of course know, those of us that are really geeky, that Mark Hamill, during the lull of his Star Wars gigs, became one of Hollywood's most accomplished voice actors.
Yes, because he can't show up on screen without people going, look, it's Luke Skywalker!
So, DC is right now producing short Justice League featurettes called Justice League Action.
Okay.
And they just did one called Missing the Mark, where the Joker and the Trickster kidnap Mark Hamill.
Ha! Okay.
So, Hamill tweeted, this is the first and only time where I have slept with the entire cast. because, and then the hero who rescues Mark is also one that has been voiced by Mark. So, yeah, it's just, it's Mark Hamill, Mark Hamill, Mark Hamill, and Mark Hamill.
Well, I mean, I love it, and because you think about, because the original, wasn't it in the original Kingsman comic,
mm-hmm.
that it was Mark Hamill that got abducted,
yeah.
not some random nuclear physicist, and in the movie, the nuclear physicist is played by Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
yeah. So, that's, yeah. Anyway. So, anything else for you on movies?
You know, to be honest with you, like I say, we have not been consuming much. In addition to our day jobs, my wife has a side business, and so we're getting ready for that pesky holiday season,
yeah.
like so many of us are.
Well, that's what I'm doing in my day job.
How about that?
So, then let's move over to TV.
Dum, dum, dum.
So we're into the new season. I mean, most of the shows have debuted that you would follow. I know there's some mid-season stuff coming that I might pay attention to. So, last episode, or maybe the episode, probably last episode, I had talked about I'd started watching a show on Netflix called The Disjointed.
Okay, yes. The pot shop run by Kathy Bates.
So that's a case of, I really enjoyed the series at first.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, did it wear out its welcome fast.
They have three jokes and...
Yeah. And they told them all yep. several times.
Mm-hmm.
So I've decided, you know what? I'm done. I'm not going to finish it. Just well, no.
I have to laugh because you think about it. What was it? It was no more than a decade ago when there was that show Weeds.
Mm-hmm.
About, oh, ha, 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 mid... suburban mom selling pot on the side to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the kinder, gentler version of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
But in between Weeds and Disjointed, it's become legal, at least in this state and in several other states across the country. And so while part of it is, hey, it's normal now, part of it is, yeah, it's normal now, and it's not as funny.
Yeah, and I guess part of it, it's like, eh, because in the end, it's like, oh, your humor is old stoner stereotypes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, if I want that, I'll go watch Cheech and Chong.
Yeah. So the other thing, all right, so before I get into some of the deeper cuts.
Yes.
Flash, all the CW DC shows are back.
Of course.
And The Flash is really, really done a good job of rebooting itself this season.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they sat down and went, you know what? When we started out this show, Barry was fun. Let's do that again.
Yay!
There's much less damn it, Barry. And all the damn it, Barry moments are where was specifically manipulated into the whatever. So, because that's what the villain is this season.
Mm-hmm.
Arrow, I think Arrow is safely at the point where this can be its last season.
Well, it's been a while.
Yeah.
We're at it, can it be Supernatural's last season too? Boy.
We actually, if you go and listen to the Don't Read the Latin episode,
mm-hmm.
About tropes, we really dig into Supernatural and their inability to do even basic research.
Well, let's not fault them for basic research. At this point, I think the big bad for the next season is going to be the zombied remains of their own careers, of their own television show that will not die.
That and they need to, you know, stop killing gay characters.
Well, that would be a plus.
Yeah. Legends of Tomorrow has just decided we're the goofy fun show and we're just going to stay the goofy fun show.
As well they should.
And Supergirl is kind of still charting great territory.
See, for me, I don't get out much, don't watch, consume the mainstream TV that much. The thing that I have been seeing is the whole bit about the woman who is Supergirl's stunt woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing things that she's doing in real life with no wires and no CGI.
She's an amazing athlete.
And what was it? There was a...
She's a Ninja Warrior thing.
She did the Ninja Warrior thing, but there was also something where she and the woman who is Scarlett Johansson's stunt double from the Marvel Universe choreographed this fight. Mm-hmm. Just the two of them. And it was amazing to see two masters at work.
Yeah.
It was great.
Well, it's like seeing Donnie Yen on film.
Oh, yeah.
When your body actually knows how to do that stuff. The thing that has surprised me this season,
mm-hmm.
I was not expecting to like, but I decided to check it out, is the Orville.
Oh, yeah. The Seth MacFarlane thing.
Yeah. And part of that was just that. Oh, it's Seth MacFarlane. I know what to expect. Because everything else he's done sets an expectation.
Yeah, and it's not a very high one.
Yeah. So I was like, I can give it a pass. But then people are saying, the Orville's great. I'm like, really? So I decided to give it a chance. And so here's my theory about the Orville.
Okay.
So the Orville is to Next Generation as Galaxy Quest is to the original series.
Well, wow, that's pretty high praise right there. So.
Or at least that's what the area it's going for. It is where Galaxy Quest was taking the standards and tropes of original Star Trek and playing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Orville is doing the same with Next Gen.
All right.
And my assumption is because Seth MacFarlane knows he's kind of playing in Star Trek's playground, has a feeling that while a lot of Seth MacFarlane humor is still there, that he has to raise his game up because he can't just, you know, he can't just be... do all the stupid...
It can't be dick and fart jokes all the time.
Well, not just that, but what it is it's Seth MacFarlane humor without the hate.
Ooh, I might have to watch this.
Yeah, it's Seth going, okay, this is Star Trek in essence.
We're walking on holy ground here.
So, you know, the one thing is that this has... And what is interesting is, even though it's without the hate, it's not that there isn't issues. I mean, one of the central premises is that the captain and the first officer used to be married and got divorced due to issues on both sides. And what's interesting is even though she's the one that committed adultery, they treat on what were the problems on both sides. But what I realized is it's Star Trek where the characters are allowed to, are competent, they're still competent at their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
There is a reason they are on this ship doing this work. But they also have some severe personality flaws.
Well, I mean, it reminds me of, there is something to be said for competency porn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see also Leverage for however many seasons it was on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there is that people who know their stuff actually doing their stuff that they're good at. And it's mm-hmm. like, ooh.
So one of the central conceits of the show is that the captain and first officer, you know, we're not going to work as a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that brought them together in the first place makes them a perfect complementary duo to run the ship.
There you go.
And there are other things going on, but it's things like they did an episode which was clearly dealing on issues of gender.
Yeah.
And they have a character on the show whose species only has one gender. And their child turns out to be the other gender. And so they deal with gender assignment and other gender issues and in a fairly serious manner.
Well, so long as it's better than some of the just say no moralism of the original first couple seasons of Next Gen.
So it's, you know, and it's not, I'm not saying it doesn't have its flaws. And I'm not saying the McFarlane humor isn't there. I'm just saying I was surprised that, there's effort going in. And I'm sitting down and realizing I'm actually enjoying watching this show. It is not a hate watch.
Life is too short to hate watch.
Which is why I stopped watching Gotham.
Yeah.
Even though they're doing apparently more, I see stuff where it's like, I'd almost like to check that out, but it's Gotham.
Yeah.
And,
well, didn't you say you'd also recently hung it up on Inhumans?
Yeah. Again, it's the problem with Inhumans is it's not, there's no hate.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I'm not engaged.
Yeah.
You know, I think even hate watching, there's at least a level of investment. But when you're seeing it, it's like, when you're watching something strictly because you almost feel there's a duty to watch it, then you've got a problem. And that's Inhumans' problem.
Yeah.
So.
I have to say, though, thinking of Inhumans and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and whatnot, the one thing that I am consuming and tearing through at a rapid pace right now is the West Wing. And I have to say, seeing Agent Casper, Coulson, pop up occasionally, it just fills me with joy.
Well, the fact that Clark Gregg, it's Clark Gregg in a suit playing government agent.
Yes.
With much the same vocal cadence that he uses as Coulson. So you called it Apocrypha.
Okay, yes.
But there's fan canon that the West Wing is actually set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe prior to the coming out of Iron Man.
Okay.
And that Agent Casper was an undercover assignment of Coulson's.
So we're going to have something where President Bartlett pulls Agent Casper aside and says, I'd like to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative.
Yeah. So that is definitely a fan canon. All right, so the other one, and I'm going to be careful because I know it's still new enough that if there are spoilers, people will hunt us down.
Oh, boy.
But Stranger Things 2 just dropped on Netflix.
As I haven't seen one, you can say anything you want. The internet might fall on your head, but don't look at me.
So, 9 episodes. Yeah. That's the thing. It's they're taking advantage of the Netflix model to go, we're going to make the season as long as it needs to be.
What a concept.
No more, no less, which means you don't get a lot of filler.
Mm-hmm.
The pace is really well done. And it holds up to the standards of the first season. And when you talk about tropes, it will lean into them, but it will also find interesting ways to subvert them.
Awesome.
First season, I feel safer on first season spoilers. You had a character, Steve, who was presented, if you're used to any show from the 80s, movie or whatever, he's the jock boyfriend who the girls will eventually jilt for the other guy.
Yes.
And, well, ultimately, it's like, why is she with him in the first place? The difference is partway through season one, they show, no, in fact, he does have redeeming qualities. And when he realizes that he was being an ass, starts trying to make up for it.
Hey.
And in the end shows that, by the final episode, shows the qualities that say, okay, I at least see why she's with him. And all I'll say is in season two, again, one of my favorite things, they don't forget his character development.
Hey.
He starts where he ended at season one and then keeps moving.
Nice.
And it's just, it's that nuance of knowing what you're the story you're telling, but knowing where to take it in a way that feels fresh.
You know, I have to say, can we just pause for a moment?
No, we got to keep recording.
Yeah, no. Can we just enjoy the fact that we are living in the future, that it's having this embarrassment of riches of intelligent, not cookie cutter media to consume?
Well, and I think part of the reason that's happening is the media infrastructure has evolved to the point where, you know, the Play It Safe networks aren't the only game in town anymore.
Yep.
You're not, you know, the only reason you're starting to see edgier stuff on the big networks is they have to compete with the streaming services.
Yes.
And the streaming services are like, no, let's take chances. Let's do different. Let's be brave. And, you know, let's face it. No one's talking about the new shows on ABC.
No.
But
I couldn't tell you a single thing that's on.
But between, you know, the big three of streaming, Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu, you have some fascinating stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Coming out. And where they're being, you know, Amazon just debuted Lore.
Yeah.
Which they took a podcast, horror podcast, telling true stories, but in a story fashion, and produced actual TV show based on it, using the same thing, but going a step further with the storytelling, which let's say they went, okay, here's a really popular podcast with a really interesting hook. Let's develop it further.
Yeah.
Where you get The Tick, the grim and gritty reboot with The Tick, or
yeah.
Dark Knight starring Adam West. And Hulu is about to debut The Runaways, which is based on a Marvel property. You know, it's right now the streaming services, because they feel a little bit more freedom,
mm-hmm.
are, and plus they can more easily tell who their audience is.
Yep.
And Netflix has stated they like the ratings, they like their subscription fees, but they know that what's going to bring the subscribers in are when they're driving the social narrative. And the fact that everyone's talking about their shows,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that everyone's binging Stranger Things in a desperate attempt to beat the spoilers showing up on Tumblr.
And, I mean, come on. You have to admit, Netflix is in a very interesting position right now. They're a euphemism for sex. They have kind of arrived.
Yeah, they really have.
I actually know a couple that went as... He went as Netflix and she went as Chill, and they were both wearing t-shirts and boxers, and that was it.
Yeah.
So. Thinking of Netflix and thinking of cool things that they're taking an experiment on, have you seen the trailer for, what's it called? Bright. Bright, as in
yes.
Shadow, the loving illegitimate child of Shadowrun and Alien Nation.
Yes. I have, with Will Smith.
Yes, putting the urban in urban fantasy.
Yes, I have. Where he's a human cop paired with an orc cop.
Yep.
And they're chasing down an illicit magic wand.
Yes.
I am the target audience.
Oh, yeah, you and me both.
I will check it out. And the fact that it's on Netflix, the comfort level of, I can start it, and if I halfway through have to go get a sandwich, who cares?
Yeah. I have to say, that one actually has me interested and excited, simply because, yeah, I mean, it's Will Smith playing a cop, it's Bad Boys, mm-hmm. you know, part 12, but with equal parts of Shadowrun, which, you know, has a near and dear part to our mm-hmm. our childhoods and our teenage years, and also Alien Nation, which is one that I fondly remember from,
yeah, yeah.
from back in the day.
But again, it's one of those things of... Without Netflix, would that have gotten made?
Nope. Doubt it.
So, I want to roll back because with the talk about Netflix, I want to talk just for a minute about Shout Factory.
Shout Factory?
So Shout Factory is a company that they take older media and do restorations and releases for. They're the ones that secured the rights to MST3K.
Yes.
And brought Joel Hodgson back.
Oh.
Interesting note. For years, none of the other players on MST3K were getting royalties. But Joel made a deal with Shout Factory, and so all the old performers are now making money on it again.
Excellent.
But Shout Factory, they'll take, regardless, they can take good movies, bad movies. They do such a great job of restoration. They're the restorations they make of movies. There are movies that do not deserve the love and care that they get.
Well, anything from most of the stuff from the 60s and 70s qualifies in that regard.
Well, and the cut of Halloween we watched recently was a Shout Factory re-release.
Ah.
So, and they do a lot of TV show stuff too. So, the reason I was thinking about it was Netflix did the Pee Wee Herman, the latest Pee Wee Herman movie, and Shout Factory did a restoration of Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, wow.
That looks better than it ever did on TV. Because on TV, Pee-wee's suit looks like it's gray.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually plaid.
Really?
And now you can tell it's plaid again because Shout Factory did a great restoration.
Well then.
So, I just shout out to Shout Factory.
Yay.
All right. So, that's really what's... I mean, I could talk about, you know, the normal shows I watch, but really that's what's driving the TV narrative right now. I guess the next big question will be... what else are we going to get to see from, what's the next great idea that's going to show up? What's going to be the next Westworld? What's going to be the next Stranger Things?
Well, you were, on a related note, and maybe this breaches into comics a bit, but you were talking about the gritty reboot of the Jetsons.
Yeah. So let's veer into comics for this part of our journey. So in the past, we've talked about the more mature reboot of the Flintstones that DC Comics has done.
Well, and didn't they do a Snagglepuss too?
Well, they've done several. The Flintstones definitely got the lion's share of the attention, but
the saber-toothed tiger. You had the opportunity for the saber-toothed tiger share, and sorry.
Well, in their case, the garbage disposal share. Cause,
yes. Yeah.
The Flintstones got most of the attention. They did Snagglepuss. They did Wacky Races as a post-apocalyptic future. So they've had several. Well, the latest one they're coming out with is the Jetsons. I don't know if it's grim and gritty any more than the Flintstones are, but the basic premise, you know, in the Jetsons there was this old... You know, the houses were really high in the sky.
Yeah, there were little clouds, little Bespin.
And the reason is because in this, the surface is uninhabitable due to global warming. Which, oddly, was also a plot point on Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law.
Okay, sure.
Are you familiar with Harvey Birdman?
Yeah, barely.
So, for those of you listening who need a little bit, Harvey Birdman, Adult Swim on Cartoon Network. Early on, before the Venture Brothers, a lot of their cartoons were taking old cartoons and doing something odd with them. There was an old cartoon called Birdman, and
that has nothing to do with
not with the Michael Keaton movie. And they reimagined it that Birdman became a lawyer,
like you do,
and all of his cases were. Like, Apache Chief from Super Friends got burned by hot coffee and couldn't grow anymore. but they did an episode of the Jetsons where the Jetsons travel back in time and try and sue to prevent the global warming that will destroy their world.
Nice.
Anyway, the basic premise of the Jetsons, from what I've been able to gather, is set in the future, but looking at what are the consequences of those decisions we're making right now.
Ooh, topical.
Yeah. So, we'll see. The first issue hasn't come out yet. There's been preview stuff.
Yeah.
But,
see, I still got to say that it's fascinating to see some of the stuff that is. I know it's been a couple years, but in light of everything that is happening, to realize that there was the Black Panther series written by Ta-Nehisi Coates,
mm-hmm.
and it's just kind of like, Oh, wow. That's saying something.
Yeah. I mean, they you get some good stuff like that. I mean, every once in a while, comics really try to remind us that they are, in fact, an art form.
Oh, yeah.
And that you know, Neil Gaiman came from comics. Let us not forget this fact.
Indeed.
Right now, the comics industry itself is in a severe slump.
Yes.
And the reasons are multitude, and we have discussed that ad nauseum in past episodes, so I don't feel we need to go over them again. But every once in a while, you still get those gems. You get the Jetsons. You get the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. You get those surprises. I'm reading a series right now, collecting after the fact. It's I think already been canceled, but it was largely digital in the first place. Mm-hmm. It was called Batman 66.
Okay, as in?
As in, it was a Batman comic set in the continuity of the old Adam West series.
Nice.
So, playing with all of the tropes, but also with the filter of where the character did go in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So they were taking, so for example, they would take Harley Quinn, a character created well after the fact, and bring in and extrapolate, well, how would she have been presented in the old series?
Interesting. Okay.
And eventually that idea they did before he passed, Adam West and Burt, with Burt Ward, did two animated movies.
Really?
And since Julie Newmar is still alive, she participated.
Nice.
As Catwoman. So they did one, the Return of the Caped Crusaders, which was just doing an old Adam West Batman story with the classic villains and everything. But then they did a sequel, Batman Meets Two-Face, where Two-Face was one of the classic Batman villains that never made it to the Adam West series.
Okay.
So they went, okay, well, let's imagine what Two-Face would look like on the Adam West series. And here's the capper. Voiced by William Shatner.
Nice.
So, you know, those are there. I mean, obviously there won't be any more because it was literally the last thing Adam West did.
Sure.
Go figure. Before he passed. But, yeah, it's... So, yeah, though, you know, sometimes the nostalgia, they did a special crossover issue for Batman 66. I don't actually, it's not part of what I own right now, but it was the Adam West Batman crossing over with the Linda Carter Wonder Woman.
Oh, well then. that would be something to see. Yeah. That does remind me, and if it would be okay to kind of...
Oh, sure. We've kind of been veering all over this episode.
Yes, well...
But... You know, here's the thing. Daniel and I do discuss what we're going to talk before the episode.
Ah!
And then the conversation goes where it will.
Well, the thing that crossed my mind is Halloween.
All right.
Because, you know... We just had Halloween. And we will pause for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And say, while most mainstream folks are talking about the fact that Gwyneth Paltrow...
Mm-hmm.
Went with a cardboard box over her head.
Yes.
Which was a lovely... only she could do that thing. And it was perfect because... Mm-hmm. And if you're wondering what I'm talking about, have you seen the movie Seven? That.
Yeah.
And seeing as, you know, Kevin Spacey won't be around to make a sequel.
Yeah.
But the other Halloween costume that I wanted to talk about, mm-hmm. aside from the fact that I went to a party
mm-hmm.
and there were four Wonder Women.
Yeah.
We had young Amazon. We had mature Amazon. We had one 70s Linda Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the blue evening dress with the sword stuck down the back. Okay. It was lovely and it was amazing. And it's nice to see that sort of representation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a couple years ago when Anthony Mackie had the picture of the kid that showed up at his doorstep wearing a Falcon costume.
So, speaking of Halloween, let's take a trip down Halloween Lane. Christopher Pratt posted pictures of taking his son trick-or-treating, his son dressed as Captain America.
Nice.
Although I think it's hard. I think the people who won Halloween were Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel and their son. So, do you know who Justin Timberlake is?
Pop singer.
Yeah, singer who forayed successfully into acting.
I've
enjoyed his acting.
I also know that he's going to be on the Super Bowl this year, and I think halfway through that show, Janet Jackson should descend from the heavens, lop off his head, and then do the entire Rhythm Nation album cover to cover before they're allowed to continue with the Super Bowl. But that's just me.
So he and his wife, Jessica Biel.
Yes.
And their son. So Justin was Buzz Lightyear.
Nice.
Their son was Woody. Mm-hmm. And she was Jessie.
As well, they should.
And with really well-done costumes. They cool. clearly spent a pretty penny, but just well done. Although, Neil Patrick Harris, his husband, and their kids every year. This year, it was old film stars.
Nice.
Anyway.
The other one that sprung to my mind back when we were talking about comics and how comics have kind of grown up into something these days. Do you know the actress Stephanie Beatrice? She was the hard ass on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Okay.
Yeah. She went as America Chavez.
Oh, yes. No, I recognize her more as her character.
Yeah.
So yes, I did see that. I like it. She was not the only person on, of some fame level who went as American Chavez. I have a feeling that character's going to show up on screen eventually.
Oh, yeah. No, both Beatriz and America Chavez are kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And so that was a nice little, how about that?
Yeah, America Chavez is a character. She was a character created in the same wave that created Miss Marvel.
Yes.
And
as in the Muslim American
Miss Marvel. Yes, as in the Muslim American Miss Marvel. She's super strength,
mm-hmm.
you know, and her catchphrase, they introduced, she's beauty, she is grace, she will punch you in the face.
That's where that came from.
Yeah. And, there's the picture that always gets shown here is somebody going, America, no. And she's going, America, yes. And she's charging at someone. So, you know, that's cool. Again, Halloween costumes can be an interesting level of creativity. But also expression.
Oh yeah,
and that's you, especially with the question about what is and isn't an appropriate costume.
Yeah, there's been a lot of interesting discussions on that of the last couple of years, mm-hmm. and it started with the "it's a culture, not a costume."
Yeah,
and it's branching into things like, oh, by the way, no, you can't dress up as Bruce Jenner anymore. And, you know, it's things along those lines. And it is speaking to a larger, what's the word? A larger awareness,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, well.
So, I've talked about this before, the streaming show Radio Dead Air.
Yes.
Every Halloween, they do a segment called Hookerween, where they go over the year's most egregious and ill-thought-out sexy costumes.
Okay.
So, I won't go over what... Just say they do post those on YouTube. So go look up Radio Dead Air and look for Hookerween with very snarky comments about what were they thinking.
You know, I think it was last year when they had the sexy minion costume. That, you know...
So, this year, I think the winner was somebody went as a sexy Clippy, the paperclip icon, with the phrase saying, so, it looks like you tried to take a character that should not be done as sexy and tried to make it sexy. Do you want to rethink that?
Okay, a self-aware, sexy Clippy.
Yeah.
That's my head hurts.
Yeah. So,
on that happy note.
Yeah, I want to veer into podcasts for a second.
Okay.
As we are one. I was surprised. So we had talked before when we had our manufactured milestone.
Yay, manufactured milestone.
That a lot of podcasts don't last.
Yes.
You know, a lot of them, they get to episode 7 or so, or maybe if they're doing something, they'll do a first season and then out of there. So one of the podcasts I had listened to, because I like serialized narrative.
Yeah.
I'm trying to create one in Family Skeletons, which
yes.
there'll be news about that very soon.
Promises, promises.
But one of the ones I listened to, and it came out around the same time the Black Tapes did, called Limetown.
Oh, yeah.
And like Black Tapes, it was riffing off of the show Serial.
Okay.
Probably even more so than Black Tapes in aping the Serial style.
Interesting.
But they ended on a cliffhanger, and this was a couple years back, and I was like, and I just assumed, and they just said it's too much, and didn't. So lo and behold, this week I'm doing my, I still had a subscription to it, and lo and behold, on my Podcatcher, a promo for season 2 of Limetown
really
popped up, and I'm like, all right, well, we'll see what's going on. You've had a long time to... But I've, you know, this, I've had another one I follow, EOS 10.
Yeah.
Where they still say they're going to try and do a third season.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously not to the levels of, say, something like Wolf 359, which is winding down. I actually listened to the latest episode today. I think they have 3 or 4 full episodes left
yep.
to complete their story. But it is interesting to see, you know, some of these, with podcasting, it really is the, you know, you're not doing the model of TV where, oh, if you've been gone for a while, you're a dead show. It's, do the creators want to make the effort of trying to come back?
Yeah, because this is you doing it because you're loving it, not because you're making money or because of anything else. You're doing it because you love it.
Yeah. So, it'd be interesting to see. I will definitely check it out. It's...
I was going to say, thinking of 359, of anything that could be picked up by, you know, Netflix or Hulu or Amazon and turned into a small miniseries, I would not say no.
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, I've made no secret that even though Wolf 359 debuted after I'd had the initial work on Family Skeletons with Jill, we were still in development when I was listening to early episodes, and it really was influential.
Oh, yeah.
On the final form the Family Skeletons scripts took.
It's damn good.
But I was discussing, I won't get into the details, but there was an episode this season where they did something that I was sitting there, and it was just that moment of they took something that was clearly just a, when they were still trying to be Night Vale in space.
Yeah.
Basically, they did something with the fact that music was a part of the early episodes.
Nice.
And brought it back home in the most brilliant way possible. I'm sitting there, I mean, it's one of those moments of when I realized what the writer had done, I'm sitting there like, you, sir, I am not worthy. Mr. Gabriel Labina, you have gone to the next level of so that's what's been going on all along. And wow, that actually meant more than we really thought it was. Basically going in, I'm sure it was essentially a retcon of the original idea, but it was good enough that it's, I don't care.
Yeah. That's the thing, is if it's good enough and it fits well enough, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And
I can only hope that my writing will reach that level.
And you want to know the best thing that I love about this? Because, again, it's people doing this stuff because they love it.
Mm-hmm.
I will bet you a bright and shiny nickel you could tag them in the liner notes for this episode, and you will get a thank you note from one.
I actually have already.
Yeah.
I have had a little conversation. At some point when Family Skeletons up, I'm going to ping him saying, hey, we talked about this a while back. Here is the podcast.
Yeah.
That you really helped inspire a large part of.
Yep.
See what happens. So at this stage, you know, I want to bring up what we're reading, but I'm embarrassed to say I'm still reading A. Grimsbo,
hey.
Warlord of Mars. Although I got to finish it because he's already put out the third book.
Yeah.
Which I forget the title, but it's Sherlock Holmes.
Nice. So this is someone who took aim at Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz.
John Carter of Mars.
John Carter of Mars.
And Sherlock Holmes.
And Sherlock Holmes, yeah.
Wow. And
can't wait to see what's going to be the fourth.
And basically put Tiffany Aching in the lead character.
Oh, Tiffany Aching would be gentle, is the gentle version compared to Arabelle Grimsbo.
Nice.
No, Arabelle Grimsbo is, you know, yeah, Tiffany Aching wouldn't as gleefully pull a switchblade on you.
Whaley, 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 it's a switchblade.
So I'm still reading that. Here's the thing, I had prepped a lot of stuff to read on the airplane that I never got on.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, holiday season is soon upon us.
Yes, what are you reading?
You know, the book that I just finished was Zen and the Art of Creativity by John Dido Laurie.
Huh.
So yeah, not really anything as far as whatnot. The one that is next on the TBR list mm-hmm. that is in the genre is one called Station 11.
Oh, right. You told me about that.
Yeah. Post-apocalyptic actor troupe going around right. and performing Shakespeare.
So I can't remember the name of all the books, but I will state that a couple days ago, Stephen King made a tweet.
Oh, yes.
Pointing out that he and both his sons are all in the New York Times bestseller list at the same time.
Which is awesome. Although John Scalzi pointed out that it is not the first, the most number of family members to be on the New York Times at the same time. Because back in the 80s, there was this book called The Book of Lists.
Mm-hmm.
Which was basically listicles bound together in treeware. But that was written by four members of one family as opposed to three.
Yeah, but was that one book?
Yes.
Yeah, whereas this is three separate
three
works
separate books by
three separate authors exactly. who happen to be father and sons.
Yes.
So I think Stephen was less about records and more about me and my boys.
Yeah.
They make me proud.
Well, I would hope so. You grow up in a house like that, you best put string words together pretty.
Well, and I again, it's that fascination of, and I know I brought it up before, but I still have to wonder with as good a writers, I know his wife writes too,
mm-hmm.
But with as good a writers as his sons have turned out to be, my question is, you know, that's when you start asking, is there a genetic component, or is it more likely that through constant observation of their father's technique, did they absorb the right skills to be that same level of authorship?
Well, of course, the difference is, though, is that, you know, Stephen King gave up needing an editor years ago, but for better or for worse.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing to consider, though, is that, you know, it's Maine. It's not like there's much anything else to do.
Does Joe still live in Maine?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just the interesting point for the episode. So, with that, so here's the question we must ask ourselves now, my friend. As we come to the end of yet another episode.
Episode 58.
I believe so, yes. I didn't actually count, but you're probably right.
Manufactured Milestone Plus One.
That's not going to be the title of this one. But
Manufactured Milestone 2, Electric Boogaloo? Sorry. Go on.
Whether we're going to be able to show up again in 2 weeks or not.
By then, we will have both seen Thor. I will also have seen Atomic Blonde. And
my question is, that close to Black Friday, will I still have a brain?
That will be something you will need to answer in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. So with that, if you would like to drop Daniel and I a line, we can be reached at fanboyingnewsnetwork.com. You can just drop us a note in the comment section. I am going to ask the question I have never asked before. Please rate us on iTunes. If we start getting some iTunes ratings, we may actually start getting more attention for our goofy little podcast about geek culture that we've been doing for a few years now.
Who knew?
So with that, we will be back, you know, theoretically in 2 weeks.
In the approximate future.
So until then, take care, everyone.
Take care.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2017 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.